Hello there. This is Neil Ewers in Madison, Wisconsin, and this is a podcast on the Zoom H2N recorder. As you can tell, I'm outside. It's night. The crickets are singing. I'm using the recorder on MS or mid-side mic. Let's pause a bit to listen to the crickets, and then we'll continue this podcast. And we're back inside now, talking into one of the five mics in the Zoom H2N recorder. Yes, you heard correctly, five microphones. This is about the most flexible recorder I've seen when it comes to its internal microphones. It can do lots of different things, and they're very good quality as well. First of all, let me give you some information about what you're going to hear in this podcast. Next, I will describe this recorder. Then I'll talk about the five microphones in this recorder. In fact, I'll give you a comparison between the Zoom H1, the Zoom H2N, and the Zoom H4N. I talk about MS, I talk about surround sound, and I give you some examples of both. And then I do a bit of mic testing on external microphones, followed by some technical information, and that's followed by some particular pros and cons about this recorder that I happen to have found. And then I give you information about where you can write to get a Word document or a text document of the menu structure. It's too long to go into on the podcast, and I figured since you might want to refer to it, you'd rather have it in writing than go try to find it in a podcast. So, let's begin by describing the recorder. It's a very unusual-looking recorder. It looks like, if you are familiar with the Rode NT1A or the Neumann TLM-103, it's got that kind of mic housing on it. Its top is a screen with the mics inside it. And there's a front screen and a back screen, and on either side of the screen there's a plastic piece that goes all the way up beside the screen to sort of hold it together. And on the top of the screen is a knob which adjusts the microphone pattern. Unlike the Zoom H4N and the Zoom H1, you don't talk into the end of it. You talk into the front of it or the back of it, depending on which microphones you have active. So at the very top of the recorder is this mic screen with the mic wheel on top, and the mic wheel has a pointer so that you know whether you're recording in XY, MS, surround sound in one file, and surround sound divided into two files. On the front of the recorder, right below the mic housing, is what looks like writing, but it's actually the speaker and the holes for the sound to come out of. Below that is a very nice display that takes up the rest of the front of the recorder, except at the very bottom lip of the recorder. The display is inset a little bit, and there's a lip on the bottom that sort of sticks out a little bit, and on that lip in the middle is a record button. Now you can get into record in a couple different ways, and we'll talk about that more later. On the right-hand side of the recorder is the menu button. Below that is the jog dial. It's basically a wheel with a little pointer on it, and it's click-stopped. It doesn't spin continuously. If you press down on it, it clicks once and springs back up, and you've only gone one song or one menu item, etc. Press in on it, and that's the OK and a bunch of other things. Below that is the analog volume wheel. Unlike the other Zoom recorders, this has a volume wheel that you turn for your record level. It is surrounded, except for the front and back of it, by a metal piece. So the metal piece is on the outside of the volume control, and you can feel the front edge and the back edge sticking out beyond that. It's going to be interesting to see if that's something that can be used easily. It does have notches that you can count with your fingernail, but they're very small. It's a very tight volume control in that it doesn't turn very easily, and it's protected by that piece of metal, or maybe it's plastic, I'm not sure. So it's going to be unlikely that you change it accidentally. Below the volume wheel is the on-off switch. It's a spring-loaded switch. You pull down on it, hold it for a second or so, and the recorder comes on. Pull down on it again while the recorder is on. Hold it for a second or so, and the recorder goes off. Press up on it, and all the buttons are locked, just as in the other recorders. And that's all that's on the right-hand side of the recorder. On the left-hand side, near the top, on the side of the plastic piece that holds the mic housing, but near the bottom of the housing, is the input jack. It's a microphone jack, not a line input jack. There is no line input jack on this recorder, that being one of its problems. We'll talk about that later. You can use external microphones. You can do plug and power. It's an 1/8-inch mini jack. Right below that are the up and down volumes for the headphones. Those are digital, an up button and a down button. Right below that is a jack for the wired remote, which doesn't come with a recorder, but you can get it in a separate accessories pack that includes things like the windscreen, the AC adapter, a tripod, USB cable, and the remote control. Below the remote jack is the headphone jack, and below that is the USB jack, and that is all that's on the left-hand side of the recorder. On the bottom of the recorder is the SD slot. There's a little fingernail notch that you put your fingernail in, and it pops open and swings down at 90 degrees, and you can insert the SD card much as you would any of the other recorders that we've talked about. It's spring-loaded. You press it in, you meet a little resistance. You press it in further, and it clicks. Press it in to release. It goes in a little bit, clicks, and then pops out enough that you can grab it with your finger. On the bottom at the back is the threaded camera mount that you can use on a tripod, or if you've got a microphone stand adapter, you can place it on a microphone stand. On the back of the recorder is the battery compartment. At the top, near the microphone housing, is a little finger slot. It's not a slot, it's just a rough place in the plastic. You place your finger in it, push in to sort of release it, pull down toward the bottom of the recorder, and much of the back comes off, revealing the batteries. The positive end of the battery goes toward the bottom of the recorder, and the negative end toward the top. And that is all that's on the back of the recorder. Let's do a test between the Zoom H1, the Zoom H2N, and the Zoom H4, and see what we hear in terms of noise and microphone sound. They're all made in this echoey room where it's very quiet. So, let's hear it. And this is the Zoom H1 recorder, beginning our test of various Zoom recorders in various situations. This is in XY, of course, because that's the way it comes. I'm in the quiet room that is very echoey. And let's listen to noise. And this is the H2N recorder in the same echoey, quiet room, letting you hear the difference between the noise and the sound of this microphone versus first the H1. And now, just for the heck of it, let's switch to the H4N. And this is the Zoom H4N in the same room, 90 degrees XY. I've always thought these mics were a little crisp, and I've always thought it was a little noisy. But I guess we'll just have to see. This is the H4N, and let's see what the difference is. And now a really good example of the difference between XY and MS recording. I'm going to play you a part of a Beatles song, The separation in the song is amazing. So, well, you'll get the picture. First, XY, then MS. I don't remember exactly where I had it. We'll talk more about how that works in a second. I think it might have been plus one or plus two. As I said, we'll talk about that later and tell you what it means. But let's listen to the difference between XY and MS in terms of stereo spread.
Joan was quizzical, studied metaphysical science in the home. Late nights all alone with a test tube. Oh, oh, oh. Maxwell Edison, majoring in medicine.
So with MS, you have a middle mic, and you have, well, actually, I won't go into the technical details. You have one microphone that acts as two side microphones. So just imagine that you've got one microphone that's center, and a microphone at the right, and one at the left. You can change the volume between those. I actually now am speaking in MS, and only the middle microphone is on. So basically, it sounds like I'm in mono. I could increase the sides so that you would begin to hear more and more and more of the side noise and therefore widen the stereo spread. You can use the jog dial on the microphones to adjust the difference between the middle microphone and the side microphones. You can't do it while you're in recording. You can only do it when you're in standby. So you can make the stereo spread narrow, a little bit wider, a little bit wider still, and even more wide. Let me exemplify this by playing you a sound that starts out with just the middle microphone, or the front microphone, and adds in the two side microphones gradually. This wasn't recorded on this recorder because I don't have a good manual way of changing that during the record process. This was a part of a podcast I did on mic placement. So it's a different microphone, but the sound is the same. What you get would be the same, albeit with a different microphone. So here is starting out at basically mono with the middle mic and adding side mics as we go. Imagine a zero point at which the side mics are exactly even to the front mics in terms of what they're picking up. You can go to minus numbers all the way down to 30-something. I don't remember what it is. I'll go look it up. And you can go up to plus 6. Plus 6 means that the side mics are raised much higher in volume than the middle mic. Now, the interesting thing is you can do this as I've done it, or you can do what's called MS Raw. In which case, you have the cardioid microphone or center microphone in the left channel and the side microphones in the right channel. So I can put it into SoundForge or any of my other decoders and change the relative volume of the mid mic and the sides after I've done the recording. So if it doesn't sound wide enough or if it sounds too wide, I can go into SoundForge and other audio editors that allow me to do that, and after the recording has made, change that. In fact, they even go one beyond that. Because if you listen to the sound recorded in this MS Raw mode, it sounds really weird. Because you hear the cardioid in the left channel and the MS mic in the right channel, and it sounds strange. What they've allowed you to do is to monitor that raw signal as it would sound in stereo. So they've thought of a lot of things that a lot of professional recorders have thought of. And now we come to surround sound. And I'm not talking necessarily about the surround sound that you can get on DVD players, etc., although there might be software that will encode it that way. What this recorder allows you to do is to record from both the front microphones and the rear microphones at the same time. Again, it's in MS, so you can increase the width or decrease the width of the stereo spread. I happen to be using both sides of the recorder, both mics, front and back, and there are two ways you can do it. You can have it all put in one file, or what I'm doing at this point is creating two files which I will merge together. That way, the front microphone is in one file and the rear microphone is in another file, and I can decide which has more volume, which has less volume. I can mute the sound of one while one is playing, etc., etc. So if I wanted to do an interview with somebody, and I didn't want a wide stereo spread because I didn't want to pick up a lot of sound that is in the stereo spread, I would have one person sitting so they could talk into the front microphone, and the other person sitting at the back of the recorder. As a matter of fact, I'm talking into the back of it now. So I've just changed sides of the recorder, as if I were a different person. I'm interviewing myself. Well, how odd. Now I'm back to the front mics, and as I said, I could mute the rear mics while person A is talking, which is what I've done. And you notice the sound of the refrigerator got less because that microphone pointing toward the refrigerator is no longer picking it up. Now it's back on. I simply muted that part in the second file. And of course, I had to overlay them in SoundForge to get them to work together. You can supposedly do that on this recorder, but it's easier for me to do in a software editor that has a screen reader that works with it. Now, is that as clear as mud? Now I'm doing the same thing, but I've opened up the spread of the microphones by increasing the side mics, and once again, the refrigerator is off to the left, and there we go. So that is one more really interesting thing this recorder allows one to do. And now I'm using an external microphone. This is the TEAC ME120 microphone, which I've used in podcasts before. It's an electric condenser mic with a battery, pretty quiet, about the same volume, a little louder than a dynamic mic, but close. And what's interesting, if I go into a room that's quieter, is that aficionados who have the H4, if you listen closely enough, well, my wife's downstairs reading a book, so I'm not sure you're going to hear this. There's a little tiny bit of whistle. That's also true of the H1 on lower volumes, but on this recorder, it is there no matter what volume you use, but it's so low that if you're even now, you can't really hear it, and I've got headphones on. If you're in any kind of ambient noise at all, you won't be able to hear it. Now I'm recording on the DPA microphones at the lowest volume possible on this recorder, which I don't believe is going to be low enough. My test, of course, is to rattle silverware. Works just fine on the H1, and that's a sign that the microphones can go low enough, or the volume can go low enough, that it will record very high-pitched, loud sounds.
All right, let's see if this distorts.
The question also is, how noisy are these mics? Well, I know the mics aren't very noisy, but how noisy is the microphone, external microphone preamplifier? Let's go into the quiet room and we can hear Ginny reading downstairs, and let's listen to noise. Yep, she's downstairs quilting and reading audiobooks. She likes to do that. Well, I would say that's a resounding failure. Not only did the silverware distort, because the microphone volumes don't go down low enough, so I can't really record very loud sounds, plus it was very noisy. I'm amazed at how well the H1 works with those mics. It's just amazing. And now a microphone that I use a lot for testing. This is the Audio-Technica AT-822. I'm in the quiet, echoey room. Interestingly enough, I have the volume all the way up. Now I'm going to normalize this. And if you listen very carefully, you can hear that little whine. But again, as I said the other day, that's mostly not going to be there because it's hard to hear even in a quiet room, let alone when there's ambience. All right, so much for the Audio-Technica AT-822. Let's move along. I'm beginning to think that if you're going to buy this recorder, you're going to buy it because you like the things the internal microphones do, and they do quite a bit. Externals seem to have more problems than I would want to deal with, but I'm sure that you can find microphones that work well with it. The TEAC did, but it sort of seems like external microphones are not why you would buy this recorder. At least it wouldn't be why I would buy it. Let's talk about some technical aspects of this recorder. I said that there were a couple different ways to go into record. When you turn on the recorder, you're actually in record standby. You can hear what's coming through the headphones from the microphone or from whatever you have plugged in to the microphone input. If you press the record button at the bottom front of the recorder on the lip that I talked about, you will go into record, you press it again, and you stop recording. If you press play at that point, you go into play and you play a file. By the way, you play a file by pressing in the jog dial on the side of the recorder, and then you can use this jog dial to go from one file to the next, or you can hold it down or up to scan quickly backwards or forwards through the file. To get out of play back into record, you can do one of two things. You can press the button at the bottom on the lip of the bottom of the recorder that I talked about earlier, and that will immediately start record. You press that again, it stops record. In fact, you can be playing a file and press that button and it will start recording. Not where you left off in the file, it will create a new file, but it will immediately start recording. Or, if you're in play, you can press and hold the menu key for maybe a half second and you're back in record standby. The reason you might want to do that is that this recorder has a pre-record feature, which enables you to hear, when you press record, what was in the buffer 2 seconds before you pressed record. So if you hear something you want to record, and you press the record button in 2 seconds, you will actually not miss the sound that you wanted to record. That will only happen, though, if you're in record standby, because in record standby, you are actually feeding signal into the recorder, which fills up its buffer, and that's how it can record the previous 2 seconds when you press the record button on the bottom front of the recorder. One way to know you're in record is that if you press in the play button while you're in record, you won't hear anything. It does one of two things. Actually, it could do both. It either puts a mark in the recording, which SoundForge and Studio Recorder can deal with, or it puts a mark and pauses. You can set that in the menu. So that in that instance, if you press play, you won't hear it do anything, but it will pause and create a mark in the file. Press play again, you'll go back into record. So if you press play when you're in record and nothing happens that you can hear, you are likely recording unless you have it set to perhaps pause, in which case you might be in pause mode, and I haven't really done that because I don't want to get into that loop. If you press play and it plays a file, obviously you're not in record, and you use the two ways I talked about earlier to get into record. So unlike the Zoom H2, because this has a speaker, and because when you press play, either something will happen that you can hear or it won't, you will know whether you're in record or not. When you connect the recorder to USB, you can do it in one of two ways. It can either serve as a sound card and you can use it for a microphone, or you can use it as a storage device. I get a lot of questions about how you use this as a storage device. Obviously, you can take out the SD card and put that in your card reader and do that. The easiest way, though, to connect this recorder to your computer via USB is to plug in the recorder with the recorder being off. Wait for about 7 or 8 seconds, press the jog dial in, and you'll get connected. This is true of almost every, in fact, I think it's true of all Zoom recorders. Turning it off and pressing whatever the inner button is after about 5, 6, or 7 seconds will give you the sound of the USB being connected. I'm not sure about the Zoom H4. I didn't try that, but I have the others, and they all work that way. Well, there is one exception to that now that I think about it, and that is the Zoom H1. All you have to do with that is to simply turn the recorder off, plug it into USB, and it connects. You don't have to press a thing. Very little information is given about the microphones in this recorder in terms of their specs. We don't know what frequency response they are. What we do know is something we don't rarely get a chance to know about any of the other microphones, and that is its SPL or sound pressure level. It actually lists it as 120 dB. Now, basically that has to do with what kind of loud sounds you can record without distorting the microphone. Because it's quite possible that if your microphone records something with a higher pressure level or a higher sound volume or higher decibel rating than it's able to cover, it will sound distorted even though the meters are below zero. So the Zoom is 120 dB. That compares to 136 dB for my DPAs and 148 dBs with the Neumanns I use to record trains. So they're a lot higher. They will take more volume. I'm sure there are a lot of microphones that are a lot lower. And it doesn't even list this information for any of the other Zooms or other recorders I have. One thing I was curious about was the physical arrangement of the microphones in this mesh screen. There are, well, they actually cheat. They're basically only 4 microphones. They say 5, and here's how it works. The backside of the screen, of the recorder, houses the MS microphones. So there's a microphone pointing straight toward the back, and the MS microphone that does the 2 sides, right and left. The front of the recorder has the XY microphones, one pointing to the right and one to the left at a 90-degree angle. So, if you count the MS microphones as actually 2 microphones because you're getting left and right, yeah, that's 5 microphones. But, who's going to quibble about whether it's 4 or 5? It does what it's supposed to do. I said there was no line in input on this recorder, and that's correct. By the way, I'm standing in my garage, and you can sort of hear the traffic in the background, what little there is. You can, however, record line-in signals by running them into the microphone input. And that works if you have a nominal line-out source that has a fixed volume. It won't work because it's too high. What you have to do is turn down your line-out source, turn down the volume on the recorder, and then you can get it to work, and it works reasonably well, with a couple exceptions. One, because you're still going into a microphone input, if you have low cut on, you get low cut in the line-in. In other words, you get bass rolled off. If you have a limiter or a compressor working, you either have to turn that off, or you get it in the line input when you try to record from a line output source. So that's not such a good deal, but it does work. The other thing I discovered is that the volume on this recorder doesn't go down very far. The microphones are still on, even when the volume is at its lowest level, which makes it kind of hard to test for floor noise, because you can't get rid of the microphone input or the external microphone input. I have measured it at about minus 75 or 78 dB, It could be lower if you could turn the volume down all the way, but you can't. So, there you have it. Well, I suppose while we're out here, we can record the garage door closing. There are three types of limiters, three types of compressors, and three types of automatic gain control on this recorder. So you have a very large variety of ways you can limit or compress the sound, and they all do different things. So that's another flexible thing. I'm in the kitchen, about to do my test that I always do, and that is run my garbage disposal. Now, I don't know whether the limiter is going to work or not. I'm on volume about 5.5 or 6, and of course, if I were higher, it certainly would work, but we'll see what happens. I guess it doesn't like banana peels. All right, I might have to dig that one out and throw it in the garbage. Well, we tried, and the question is, did the limiter work? I don't have headphones on, so I really don't know. But the point of all this is that there are a lot of ways that you can, and in fact, what you can do is you can turn monitor on, and when you set the limiter, you'll be able to immediately hear what it's doing. Kind of nice. As I mentioned earlier, you can create 4-channel surround sound in 2 different files, one for the front mics and one for the back. If you do that, they go into a totally different folder than the stereo files. And when you have the recorder set to record in that manner, those are the only files you can play back. You can't just arrow through all of your files when you're in that folder. The only ones that appear are the separated 4-channel files. In order to play the other files, you have to get out of that mode and back into any of the other modes. One other thing, once you finish recording a file, it does take a little bit of time to save, so you may not be able to record immediately. It doesn't take that long, but if you press the play key and nothing happens, that's likely what's happening. It might take, a couple seconds. Now, I did record an 8-hour file, and like other recorders, it splits larger files into 2 gigabyte sections. When I saved that file, it must have tried to save it all at once, because it took a couple minutes to save that one. But normally, it only takes a few seconds. Now I'm sitting here in front of my computer looking at my notes. I want to talk about some of the pros and cons of this recorder. Let's start with the pros. Certainly one of them is that you can record both MS and surround sound in a way that you can change their ratios in the post-production process. That is a really nice thing. Now, let me clarify one thing. I said when I talked about the raw encoding of MS that you got the cardioid in the left channel and the figure 8 mic in the right channel. That's true, but the figure 8 is phased such that if you simply tried to add those channels together in, say, a studio recorder, which doesn't allow you to work with MS, you would hear something weird. So you have to have a recording package that allows you to actually deal with the phasing properties of the right channel, the MS channel, in order to be able to work with that in the post-production. It's also nice that the surround sound can be split into 2 files. It doesn't have to be, you can do it in 1. But you can also do it in 2, and then again, in your post-production process, you can deal with them. The microphones on this recorder are as quiet as many I've had. There is a little more noise in my left channel than the right channel. That might have to do with what they're asking the microphones to do, but it's certainly tolerable. You hear the computer in the background, you do hear some noise in the microphone preamps, but relative to others, I think it is quite quiet. The microphones sound nice. They sound a little different when you're using the back mics than the front mics. Just because of the angle of the microphones, I'm using XY now, which doesn't sound quite as good. But basically, good sounding microphones. Also, they're not as prone to wind as other microphones because they have the mesh screen, which actually operates as a pop filter. So I have never used a windscreen while making this recording. I'm about 6 inches away. I could use a windscreen. It does muffle it a bit. And it would take an interesting windscreen to work with this because it's a pretty big microphone cage that these mics are in. You also have very good limiters, very good compressors, many options about how you want to limit and how you want to compress, and even how you want to have automatic gain work. One really nice thing about this recorder is how quickly it boots up. I have an 8-gig card in here, and if I put this card in my Zoom H4n, it takes maybe 18-20 seconds to boot up. This does it in about 3, and it doesn't seem to depend on the card. I haven't had a 32-gig card in here, which is as high as it takes. By the way, this takes SD and SDHC cards, not the micro versions. The fact that the mic selection wheel has a pointer, unlike the Zoom H2, which you never really did know where you were in the mic settings, you could be front, back, combined, whatever. At least this way you know based on the feel of the pointer. Here's a statistic for you. 20 hours on WAV 44.1 16-bit using 2 AA batteries. Not bad. The other nice thing is that when the batteries are dying, the recorder saves the file before the batteries completely die. Therefore, you don't ever lose anything. By the way, sorry about my voice. I woke up this morning with a sore throat and it sounds pretty wretched. What don't I like about this recorder? The fact that it doesn't have a stop button. It would be nice if it did. The volume knob we've talked about. It's really hard to use. It is click-stopped, but it's hard to get your fingernail in there. And the fact that it's analog and you can't count the clicks. Some people like one, some people like the other, but this is analog. It does have a stop at the bottom or top. I was afraid that it wasn't going to, and it would just totally spin without stopping, but it does. As we also said before, the mic selection knob is really hard to use. It's doable, but boy, it is really hard to get it to turn. It's so small, and the knurled edges don't help a whole lot. Another problem is that the menus default to where you have them set, and you have to remember where that is in order to know where you are in the menus. Turning the recorder off and back on again and going into the menus leaves you at the top of the menu tree, but still, when you go down through the menus, you're going to find that where you go into record settings, it'll be defaulted to whatever you have it sit on, whether that's MP360 or WAV 44.1, etc., and you won't know that unless you remember it. So you won't necessarily know how to change it. The line-in situation we talked about, so no need to go back into that. There's only one low-cut filter choice. It's a good one. It starts at 80 Hz, but that's a typical one. In fact, you can match that on the Zoom H4. There is some noise handling. If I move my hands on the recorder, you can hear them. Not a lot, but it is distracting. So I try to keep them rather quiet. It is a plastic recorder. It feels kind of, it's heavy, it feels solid, but it is a plastic case, and as I said, you do get some noise handling. According to the manual, removing the batteries resets the clock. I checked that the other night by just taking them out for a couple seconds. I'm going to go change them now and see if it does in fact reset the clock. More emails to deal with. Actually, I kind of like getting emails, except I get about 500 a day. So it's a little depressing sometimes when you get behind. It also might explain why I don't answer everybody's email as quickly as they would like. Well, I now have a new set of batteries in, and the time remains set. So perhaps if you leave the batteries out for X minutes, and I don't know what X minutes is, might be X hours, X days, for all I know, I did do it rather quickly, but it certainly didn't unset the clock. There's a setting in the menus which allows the play button, when you're in record, it normally puts a mark in the file, but you can also have it pause. The trouble is, I don't like the fact that it does both. Oh my goodness, more emails. What if you want to be able to pause the recording at some point, but what if you want to make a mark while something is still going on? I don't like the fact that they're together. I'd like to be able to make a mark without bothering to pause, and I'd like to be able to pause without making a mark. And at this point, you can do one or both. Not the way I would have set it up, but then that's the breaks. There's one other thing that you need to be careful of. Well, there are a number of things, but one is that the menu key also serves as the key to take the recorder from play mode to record standby. So here's the sequence. It comes on when you boot it up in record standby, assuming you haven't changed anything. If you press play, you start playing a file, and you arrow through the files with the jog dial. You can press in the jog dial to pause. When you want to go into record standby, you simply hold down the menu button for a half second or so. Now you're in record standby. If you now press the menu button again, you're in menus. So that's one of those buttons that serve two purposes and could be confusing, because now if you press the jog dial, you're not playing, you're actually doing something in the menus. One way to get out of menus is to hold in the menu button for a couple seconds, and you're sure you're out, and then you can press play, and you're fine. But that double-functioned menu go into record standby button could be interesting. Now here's another little twist. If you're in play, and you hold down the menu button, you go into record standby. If you're playing a file, though, and you tap the menu button, you go into a separate playback menu. So you can begin to see that this is not a user-friendly recorder to a person who can't see the screen. It works if you know all the little tricks and how to get out of the places you're in once you're in them. But there are some situations here that will be interesting. I just turned the low-cut filter on. I'm sitting here in front of my computer as I was before. And let's see if you can hear any difference in sound as I wander around the house now, getting ready to end this podcast. I think if you are looking at flexibility of internal microphones, you have really got something that you have not had on any other recorder. It does a lot of stuff, and it does it well. The microphones sound good. They're reasonably quiet. Accessibility-wise, it is going to be interesting. And what I'm going to do with the menu is make a written copy of the menu tree and make that available rather than going through it on this recording. If you want me to send you that, please contact me at neal@ravenswood.org. And I'll be happy to send you the menu tree. I'm also going to do another file, which is not the whole menu, but specific things you do often, and how many clicks up or down, or how many inputs you have to do to get to them. I'm not going to tell you what you're passing by, but for example, format the SD card might be something like press the menu key, go up twice, enter, go up once, enter, go up once, and enter. That way, you can easily discover how to get things done quickly. You don't necessarily need at that point to know what you're passing by, as long as you know how many clicks there are and how many inputs. So, how do I end this? I just changed to mid-side recording. I was in XY. Actually, before I end this podcast, let me just play you some sounds I recorded before I made the podcast. There's no narration, but there's some sounds of cicadas and crickets and the neighbors playing and a few little tidbits of sounds you can get, mostly using mid-side, just to give you an idea of the stereo spread available on this recorder. Did you see that? That chicken pushed the cat right into the toilet. And there were 5 microphones to record it happening. Actually, I only used 3.
Uh-oh.
All right, all right, all right. I suppose you didn't even notice how widespread the toilet recording was. MS plus 2. And I think that means it's time for me to go. I've gotten silly enough here. And I think I've covered about all that I can cover. As I said, I will be doing a menu tree. In fact, it's almost done. And another file for people who want to go quickly to things. And let me know if you need them. Thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed it. And if you have questions, let me know. This is Neil Ewer saying, I hope you've enjoyed the podcast. Maybe we'll meet again soon.